as I remember, representatives both from the students and the faculty, and we set up policies and procedures for the conduct of intercollegiate, well, extramural sports. We based our competition on the level of skill at the various schools so that you would have an A, you might have an A league and a B league and maybe a C league in volleyball, and there were various ways in which you would determine whether you should enter the A or the B or the C, and you could have as many teams as you want, so that Long Beach frequently in those days had 5 volleyball teams because everybody loved to play volleyball, and we had such excellent coaches and such an excellent program that and the competition was well regulated. The people, all of the schools, and I think this is one thing really unique about this, was that nobody dominated the situation. What Occidental, I mean, the Occidental, the small schools were members, the private universities were members, big universities, but all had an equal vote, and it was on the basis of how good your team was as to what league you went into, not about how big your institution was. It was a very friendly
group. Could you name some of the schools that were involved?
Okay, Northridge, L.A. State, Long Beach, Fullerton, San Diego State, UC Santa Barbara, UCLA, USC, Occidental, Pomona, Whittier, Cal Poly Pomona, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Well, one time we had a group of about 22 colleges coming together, and we'd have a meeting in the fall and a meeting in the spring at which our policies would be determined, and we'd organize the tournament schedule. And at that point in time, I think we were one of the early leaders our group was better organized than most of the groups over the country, but of course then it just boomeranged. But many of us feel that those were the days when women's sports were at their best, in that we didn't have scholarships and we didn't have recruitment, and the students chose to come to an institution because they wanted the, you know, whatever the academic program was at that institution, and then they would also, if they wanted to play, they play, but they weren't hired to come here to play for CSULB. And we had very good feelings between the fact that it was not high pressured, and we felt that sports for women was a good time for sports for women.
Did you do other sports aside from...
Oh, okay, so then during the time when I was coordinator, we had the 3 co-ed sports, and then we had the team sports, volleyball, basketball. We've just recently have gotten into soccer, or to, not soccer, to softball. We never had softball as a regular part of our program. We did swimming, and... gymnastics. And when we have had hockey more recently, we started hockey. So those were, what have I left out? Gymnastics, swimming, archery, badminton, fencing, swimming, or volleyball and basketball. I think I've left out something in the video. But it was about an 8-sport program, 8-to-9 sport program when we were involved, and we had the regulation that if students were interested in bringing in an additional program.
Excuse me.
Polly. She played the public school courts, and she was Polly, and she went to LA State. Yeah. Well, I forget where we were.
You were talking about the extramural program that developed, and...
Yeah, and then we went to we went from the term extramural to women's intercollegiate sports, and more recently than have gotten into women's athletics. Just the use of terminology is very interesting, you know. I was always in favor of the term women's intercollegiate, women's and co-ed intercollegiate sports, because it seemed to me to differentiate between the athletics that the men play and the intercollegiate sports that the women play. But now, of course, the term is, means the same thing. You don't know.
No, I'm trying to, I don't understand what you're saying. Maybe you can explain more in more detail.
Well, to me,
how it differentiates.
Women's intercollegiate sports designated, and still does in my estimation, a type of competition that that is different from the recruitment, pay-for-play, emphasis on winning sort of philosophy that I associate with men's athletics. So maybe it's this thing I associate sports with women and athletics with men. But of course, it's women's athletics now, so there's not that much different. I should say this too. I think, as I can recall, when I took over the budget in 60, or took over women's extramural sports in 1963, 64, that we had initially, I think, a $400 budget.
Okay.
So, of course, one of the interesting
for
everything.
Transportation?
Oh, it didn't. It didn't. And every penny that we got each year was arrived at. You know, there was no legislation. There was no Title IX. There was no nothing in those days. And so we would each year make our appeal to the Associated Students Board of Control. And we would do... spend a lot of time on developing budget proposals so that we could show how the money was spent and the value and how, you know, that women ought to have this opportunity. But, you know, nobody cared in those days. They kind of, they just weren't in a position where they could in any way consider women's sports as being important enough to budget for. But yet every year we would make our pitch and our budget would grow, and then during the year we would, when special things came up or when we, you know, maybe our team had qualified to go to a state tournament or something, then we'd make an appearance. They got so sick of seeing us up there. But we would go and request additional funds. And a lot of my job was making the trip back and forth to the Associated Students Office. And so that by the time we the program in women's and co-ed intercollegiate sports was joined with the men's program under the Sports Athletics and Recreation, we really had in terms of other collegiate institutions, we had one of the best funded women's and co-ed sports programs at that point in time, and way above a number of the other institutions.
Yeah. Since you were involved in this extramural and intercollegiate activity, could you compare the program at Long Beach to LA State or Northridge or Fullerton?
Okay, yeah, I think I can. We, early on, had a pretty active men's intercollegiate sports program or men's athletic program. Many of the men, when they were hired on the faculty, were hired on as coaches. Here they were with doctorates, you know. Our first football coach was a doctor, Mike Delotto. And so they were professionally oriented, but they also had coaching expertise. So one of the problems in hiring in those days was that there was always a need to hire another coach for the men's team. You know, they wanted to expand, and they always had need of another coach. And yet it was, we had about the same number of men and women students on campus. And so we had Dr. Reed, who had been long about the late 50s, she was appointed as coordinator for the women faculty. She really spent, a lot of her time and energy convincing everybody that if you were going to have a good faculty, you needed representation, men, women as well as men, and that it was not fair to always hire on men for all the additional positions, that it was important that we needed women to teach dance. That was one of the big, big issues on this campus. She tried and tried and tried to be able to hire a dance teacher, but it was always another coach, that won out. So because of her emphasis, and she was well respected on campus as an administrator, she brought on more women, convinced people that we should have women, especially when we had a separate department, that we should be allocated department positions, by department and not... And so we were able to develop a faculty of women that was far, that represented many of the different levels of expertise in various, various sports and games and dance and professional, areas like kinesis. Whereas some of the other universities in our area, like LA State and Northridge, and although Fullerton had those three were all integrated departments and never separated off. Now, you'll hear lots of discussion about the values of a separate department, the values of an integrated department, but one of the reasons why we really did provide an excellent program, both major program and intercollegiate sports program for our students, was because we had the faculty to do it. And we had the leadership from Dr. Reed and the interest and the concern to provide for our women students. And she would do such things as, facilities are very important. You can't conduct a program without facilities. And so we would schedule our classes and our intercollegiate sports program into this, what was then the women's gym. Well, of course, it was only natural that the basketball coach thought that at 3 o'clock they would come down and take over the women's gym. And Dr. Reed said, no, I'm sorry, we have women's intercollegiate sports schedule in there. Well, now, see, this didn't happen at other places where you didn't have a strong woman administrator. And so the athletic programs at other institutions didn't have, they would be meeting at 7 o'clock in the morning for women's basketball because the men's basketball team had the gym every day from 3 to 6. So the women's team would come in at 7 o'clock in the morning. Well, our men would meet down there in the gym and our women would meet in this gym. So I think this was one of the reasons why we were able to develop. And we had excellent people. We were able to hire excellent people. And so we really, I think, took the leadership. We're known as an institution that took the leadership in promoting a idealistic program of women's intercollegiate sports. And by that I mean it was founded upon ideals and standards. And we tried to keep within bounds, keeping to priorities of attendance at class was more important. Schedule events not at the same time of classes or not become involved in too many things and, that sort of thing. So we did have high standards, but I think we had a fine, we're known for our fine program and still are.
Okay.
And still are.
I didn't think about this before, but when you were hired to teach health, they might have hired a man to teach those health classes at least.
Well, that's absolutely true. And one of the reasons why I was hired was really because they thought I would be teaching dance, and then Dr. Reed saved me from the dance. But there were certain things like, one of the courses that we offered was fitness and conditioning. It's been a very popular course throughout, you know, all the time. And in those days, it was a class for women, and you needed women to teach the fitness and conditioning. You needed women to teach the major classes, or at least that was the stance we took.
But even in those days, some of the undergraduate courses were co-ed.
That's right. And see,
I went to school.
You had, and probably the philosophy was, well, you know, who doesn't make any difference who teaches those classes, because they're mixed classes. And so you could keep hiring more and more men and fewer women.
Yeah.
So it's only... Well, I think Dr. Reed was very much ahead of her times when she took the stance and stood up for what was best for women students. And... was way ahead of our times, and we've all benefited from it. We really have.
Yeah, but I guess I want to make that point one more one more time, that most of those required lower division courses, when you had required lower division, most of those were co-ed.
That's true. They were all co-ed, except maybe the fitness and conditioning.
Yeah.
That's right, and so a man or a woman could be scheduled to teach those classes. That's right, they were all co-ed. Yes, we've always had our general education program has always been co-ed, except for wrestling and those things, right?
Well, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah,
that's a real struggle that women in physical education face that they didn't face in other areas.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean that there were. That there was a women's physical education department.
Yeah.
But men could be hired.
That's right. Okay, that's right. And that's true. And what would happen as we developed... See, this is... Now, as I say, we are unique at Long Beach in having... We're very unique in having started. When we originally started, we were one department. And it wasn't until we got into athletics and it was obvious that the women would be better off if they had a separate department so that they could have a separate budget and maybe some facilities to schedule classes in, that this was going to be the only way that we could hold our own against the influence of the athletics over here. Now, they were athletes and they were also physical educators, but... You know, when you're developing an athletic program, the funding and the faculty and all tended to, although Dr. Montgomery tried desperately to keep an even keel, nevertheless, there was the emphasis on athletics. So because we did survive and have a separate department, we were able to be allocated certain facilities. So that the way it would work would be that the men had the original set of tennis courts down here, and when the new courts came on, the 10 here, they would schedule the men's courts and we would schedule the women's courts. So, you know, the men would be teaching on that end and the women would be teaching here. They would schedule the men's gym, we would schedule the women's gym. They would... Now, this is before Title IX even was heard of. But there was arrangement that Pat worked out and fought hard for, so that the men's department would schedule the swimming pool like Monday and Wednesday, and we'd schedule the swimming pool Tuesday and Thursday, and the PE-110 or elementary area room was done much the same way. But as far as the swimming pool was concerned, after 3 o'clock, you see, the pool was the men's, and we could never make a dent in... For a number of years, if the women wanted to have any intercollegiate swimming, they went in it late in the afternoon or came in early in the morning. But the fact that, and so, yes, we had men teachers teaching co-ed classes over here, and the kids would look and they'd sign up for tennis, and they didn't know whether they were going to be getting a class in men's PE or women's PE. But we did have, but in situations where they didn't have this protection of a department, It was very hard for women to get onto faculties, and you'll find, you know, studies that we did, that the disproportionate number of men in a single department of physical education was astounding compared to our situation here. And it was, we've always been about, up until recently, 2-1, 2 men to 1 woman in physical education, but that was much better than these other places where there were many more men in a department.
You talked before about going to professional organizations, and you just said studies that we did. I wonder if that referred to a professional organization or...
Well, there are... how to answer that question? There have been some groups that have gone into... I know a Western Society is an organization I belong to, and they did support a study that was done by one of their members on the differences, certain differences between integrated departments of physical education and separate departments of physical education. But when I spoke of we, I meant more the women in our department doing ferreting out and doing some research in terms of finding justifications for remaining a separate department. That's we did a lot of talking and a lot of surveying people's opinions, etc., to see the influence, what happens to departments when they're integrated, and you know, what are the values of integration, what are the values of staying separate, and all that sort of thing. Because we had always felt that we had been able to do the best job because we had a separate department. But we're getting along fine now.
Well, I wondered if there were an association of women's physical education teachers that in California or whatever that kind of gave strength and allowed people to pass information.
There are several... There is a state, a California Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance, but that's men and women, and it's for public school and college people. The organization that was really primarily developed for women in higher education was the National Association for Physical Education of College Women, NAPECW, and it was a group that was started, I think, along about 1920s, and many of us belonged to it, and there was also a group, National College Men's, NCPA, National College Physical Education Association for Men, NCPAM, and they were also an organization, and we had some joint projects together about 3 years, 3 or 4 years ago. Well, we had several votes on it, but finally both groups voted to merge National Association for Physical Education in Higher Education, which is for both groups. But at the district level, the one group we have now, just for women, is Western Society for Physical Education of College Women. And that group encompasses college physical education teachers from Washington, Oregon, Montana, California, Hawaii, Alaska, Utah, Arizona, West Coast area.
Have you been active in these groups?
Yeah. I was president of Western Society for Physical Education of College Women, and I was treasurer of the National Association for Physical Education of College Women before, about 2 or 3 years before they merged. So that has been a big, major portion of my life, has been active involvement in those two organizations, and then also within the state and the National Physical Education Association, we've had sections usually defined as a division for girls and women's sports or national section for girls and women's sports. Anyway, sections within the big national and state structure that are designed to promote good standards for girls and women in sport. And so I was very active in those associations at the state, district, and national level many years ago when those programs were developing and when I was coordinator of intercollegiate sports here. I've not been so active recently in them.
I'm not sure what good standards mean.
Originally in women's sports, we didn't mandate that you and in order to be eligible you had to do this and so. You know, you had to have so many units and all that stuff. We approached it from the national level and from the state level too, that standards for participation would be that a student's academic scholarship record should not to suffer because of their participation in athletics. Standards mean something that you set out there as a guide, but it's not a rigid law. And so our national associations for designated for girls and women in sport started out really being more of a standard-setting group, such as teams of comparable levels of skill should play against each other, not teams that have been equally well trained, fitness level and stuff like that. And so this is the way girls' sports really started out. And then as we got into intercollegiate sports more, then of course you started getting organized and then you started getting eligibility, and all of this sort of thing. We became more routinized. But still this group on the national level especially still is trying to keep women's sports at a very high level of integrity. And now, of course, the competition, the governance of women's sports at the college level has gone from the local group organizing like Southern California, okay, like we did, we were our own thing. Then there was what was called Commission of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women that saw that unless the women organized, that the men were going to, now this is way back in early 70s, unless we organized the women's sports, that the men would come in, NC2A would come in, and we didn't want that to happen. And so this Commission of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women was developed. And then that led into our Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women, which has a national structure and then down into regional structure, et cetera. And as these groups came along, then of course legislation and eligibility standards and recruitment and all of this sort of thing became legislated, I would say. And the crucial, and my position is, the crucial decision with respect to the direction of women's sports came when there was a suit filed, and I believe it was in Florida, by students who were not given scholarships in women's sports. And this was after Title IX, and it was considered to be discrimination because a man at that institution could get a scholarship and a woman couldn't. Well, many of us in the field were violently opposed to the offering of scholarships, not because we didn't think the kids deserved them as much as the men, but we could just, and not, talent, we were not opposed to giving recognition of talent as you do for music or art or anything else, but it was just that we had seen what horrible problems the men have gotten into. Once you offer scholarships, then you're going to try to get the best person. It's tied with recruitment. And we simply didn't want to get involved, and we did everything we could to avoid it. But here is this national association being sued for discrimination because of our standards. And although they could have gone to court, you know, it had been, it cost thousands of dollars to defend a suit like that, and they pulled the membership, you know, should we give on this? And we voted to uphold a rule against scholarships, but nationally they didn't. And so as far as I'm concerned, when they started awarding scholarships and the whole philosophy, in a sense, started changing. And AIW now has, of course, been trying to survive. Originally, it developed as a outgrowth or was associated with our American Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, the national structure, and AIW grew out of it and had the support of our national structure. They have, a couple of years ago, separated from the National Association, so they're standing alone. Well, of course, they're targets for NC2A now, and I believe with the recent decision that NC2A will have tournaments, you know, women tournaments for women, that I'm afraid that AIW is not going to be able to stand up very much longer as a separate organization. So we go the, you know, and my only concern is that I just hate to be to see women's sports that I think has so much to offer girls and women become
professionalized
and become the only model that we have is the men's model. And I think we should have been able to develop a model that is different from the men's, that maybe the men and women could go into together. But I don't think the NC2A taking over the women's program is just going to... the women's program will just become a model NC2A program, you know. So I'm very, very unhappy about that. But still, it's been interesting to see the whole development of women's sports from being a part of it at the beginning to where it's at now.
Yeah. Well, do you have an idea for another model? I mean, how women could take their half of the Title IX money and make it?
Yeah, there have been some things developed. I think it could. The problem is that if you always have to have something to compare it to, and really women's, I think it's been unfortunate that women's leaders, not in physical education, but maybe some of the women lib leaders, only look to having a program for women comparable to that for men. And if the men get this much money, then the women should get this much money. If the men have athletic uniforms, the women should have athletic uniforms. So the role model is the men's program, and the women fight for having the same thing. Women have pushed women in physical education into that. I think many of us would like to see programs where, well, just as an example, when we started sports Long Beach, I don't think there was any faculty time devoted to it initially. The people did it on their own. And then as we were able to, we would give a teaching unit credit to it. At one time, there were three different coaches of volleyball, one of whom wasn't getting any time at all, but the other two maybe were getting minimal units, and they were taking care of 75 people out for volleyball. What's happened through the years is the number of people has become reduced, and the number of units involved, the number of people involved in coaching, has become increased. So, you know, you're giving all of your attention and all of your funding and your expertise of coaches to a very few individuals. And I think one of the things many of us would like to see is doing something that would enhance the rest, all of those other students, than spending so much money on so few people. And we used to have the best kind of competition possible just here in Southern California. There was no need to go all over the country and spend the money to go all over the country for competition, you know, as we do now. So I think our concerns are, isn't there a better way that we could do it to have more people involved in sports, have it on an ethical basis, so that every time you read the paper you weren't reading about another school on probation or another coach being fired, or and take away all of the emphasis put upon athletics. What else do you want to know?
I think that's a wonderful idea. But I think I still think you should have half the budget to do the way what you want with.
Yeah, but that, unfortunately, that just isn't. We just got that male model out there of athletic program, and we just can't convince. The way to do it, the only way I think that it can be done, will be if the college and university presidents ever stand up to NC2A and say, we're going to change the sports programs, and we're going to reduce some of the emphasis and have. But no university president is going to incur the wrath of the Alumni Association. I don't think it's the students. The students aren't that involved. But the athletic associate, or the alumni are very involved. What else do you want to know?
I'm interested in the other kinds of changes that you've seen on the campus. I mean, you've watched the rest of the campus grow.
Oh, yeah, the buildings and all. The buildings have grown so much. The library has grown. One of the best things that has happened, I think, on the campus, from our point of view, two of the best things, having the Student Services and Administration Building down here in lower campus has tended to bridge the gap between the lower and the upper campus. Administration Building used to be on 7th Street when it was first, way up there at the other corner. Well, number one, every time you had to go up there, you had to devote about a half an hour of your time to go up and back. And we were always just having to go from one end of the campus to the other. And I feel very strongly that it was a great thing to have that new building down here on this end of the campus, and for the first time to bring the people from upper campus down to this end. And we, you know, were able to see more people and communicate with more people. Second thing was having the student union where it is, because again, this bridges the gap between upper and lower campus and tends to bring everybody together in the student union cafeteria area. So yeah, it's been exciting to see the physical facilities of the campus develop.
You said you opposed the forcing out of Dr. Peterson.
Well, I don't know that should be on record, the forcing out. Well, I mean, he resigned. Yeah. He did resign. Is that what you have found in your?
Oh yeah.
In your study, I'm not revealing any.
A majority of the faculty voted
to
Dr. Peterson and 4Ds to resign.
That's right. Well, I was not one of the ones that signed one of those petitions.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't pretend that didn't.
No, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. But I was always. But I know that the. Of course, this has been my only experience on a university campus, so I can't compare the campus politics with campus politics at other situations. But it has always seemed that the activities of the Academic Senate have been of special significance to the faculty on this campus, maybe more so than other campuses. And, but as I say, I've never really been very much involved in faculty administration, differences of opinion and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I just wondered if when Dr. McIntosh arrived, that it made a difference in the way that the women's physical education department operated. Or
let's see, when Dr. Hugh came in, probably 59 to 69. I remember his beautiful delivery to faculty meetings. I can't remember actual circumstances when he had any direct dealings with us. Or any impact. It was, I guess, developing during those times was the increased interest in student participation and student unrest and all of that.
The first thing that developed, I think, was the increased faculty participation in running
the school. Uh-huh. Yes, that's always been a... Yes.
Yeah, the development of the faculty council and then the academic...
Yes.
And the beginning of committees.
Yes, I guess all that did probably occur during
McIntosh then. And was the first organized your department?
Well, We were a division, and I came on in 55. By 58 or 59, I know that Reed was coordinator for women. We were still in a division, and then probably 59, 60, we went in to we qualified as departments when you had to have so many faculty and so many student units, etc. And so then we had women's PE department and men's PE department, and then when, I don't know the order, but recreation and health education, but we were still a division during those days. And it wasn't until the time when we went into the school, then we went into the School of Applied Arts and Sciences that we became different departments in the School of Applied Arts and Sciences, and no longer identified. Well, we had all been identified as a division,
mm-hmm.
and at the point in time when the school, the university was growing and they needed a bigger organizational unit, I don't know whether there was an intermediary structure or not, but anyway, we went into the School of Applied Arts and Sciences.
Yeah, but you became a separate women's physical education department.
Way early.
The departments were organized.
Yes,
which was in the early 60s.
Right. That's right. In fact, as I say, I think I was on a reorganization committee probably when I got back from my leave, and we spent much time talking about whether or not we wanted to have one department of physical education or maintain our two separate departments. And the reorganization committee, and probably was 60, 61 along in there, said that our recommendation was to maintain separate departments and to encourage recreation and health to have departmental status as soon as they could. So it wasn't then, so we were separated until 78.
Yeah, so the reorganization into schools didn't make that much difference.
I think we felt it was a good move to go into the School of Applied Arts and Sciences, because again, one of the advantages in that situation was that you had equal status with every other department, no matter how large or small you were as a department. If there were 10 departments in the school, each of them had a role or membership on the Dean's Advisory Council. Each of them was allocated a budget. Each of them had membership on, like, the Financial Affair or Budget Planning Committee for the school, etc. So we had equal representation, and we liked that.
And it hadn't been that way when you belonged to a division?
Well, when you were a division, sometimes there were times when funding would come down to the division, and then the division would have the responsibility in committee, that the chairman, et cetera, in committee, of dividing, like, the faculty appointments or hiring and funding, et cetera. And again, if you were a smaller department, sometimes you lost out on some of those, see. So when you appear a structure and you're equal status to everybody else, you're in a better position.
Yeah, I guess there was more departmental autonomy.
Yes.
Than the schools.
Right. I think this would be a way to say that, yeah. And especially if, you know, if the school makes the allocation on budget rather than having the allocation come down to a group and then batter back and forth, you know, barter back and forth about it. So we have always felt that having a separate department was an advantage, that we were in an advantageous position. But not now, not under the circumstances as they are now. Because, you know, everybody is so conscious of discrimination now and avoiding discrimination and fair employment practices and all the kinds of things that ruled against us initially, that it's,